And I'd like to just welcome everyone to Citizens Climate University tonight. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topics, as you can see, is broadening support with veterans and national security audiences. So hopefully tonight you've wanted to create local events that reach a target audience different than perhaps the makeup of your local group tonight, and you're in luck because we're going to do just that, a webinar that's going to highlight the work that CCL has been doing across the Southeast and the larger work going on throughout the country, screening both the burden and tidewater to attract veterans for discussions on climate and energy to help broaden the diversity of our local chapters. And to help us accomplish that tonight, we have three esteemed guests. So please allow me to introduce each of them. We'll have
General Devereaux,
a retired Major General and former Director of Operational Planning, Policy, and Strategy for the U.S. Air Force. Rick is a member of the Advisory Board of the Center for Climate and National Security and helped plan and execute a successful showing of the burden sponsored by his local Asheville, North Carolina chapter for CCL. Sean Collins. Sean was a captain in the U.S. Army before co-founding Revive Energy in Nashville, Tennessee. He's been a member of CCL for the past year and has also been managing the Southeast Veterans Tour for the past 6 months. And lastly, we have the wonderful Roger Sorkin, the executive director of the American Resilience Project and the director of films, including Tidewater and The Burden. Roger is a fellow with the Truman National Security Project, where he also serves as a surrogate speaker for their Operation Free campaign. And if we've done our job right, at the end of this hour, you should be walking away with three goals, one of which is just understanding the four key considerations that help in planning a successfully focused recruiting event in general. Doesn't just even have to be with veterans tonight. The other one is focusing on an initial plan for recruitment that you can use with your own community. We'll be developing that side by side. And then lastly, we'll have the chance to interact with three experts within the realm of planning and executing climate events focused on veterans and national security audiences. So with that, I'm just going to provide a quick review of the actual agenda. It's going to be pretty straightforward. We'll first start with reviewing what's appropriate content, and then dive into how to do more focused recruitment, emphasizing location, as well as how to conduct wonderful follow-up. And then we'll have a robust Q&A discussion with a partner reflection activity at the very end. So what I'd love to do is just first off, start by inviting everyone to grab a piece of paper, or if you are so motivated, we actually have a little note sheet that you can follow along tonight with. It's just cclusa.org/CCU-veterans-notes. And what we'd like you to do throughout the training is just think about an event that you and your local group might host to attract a unique audience and start really taking notes that capture your attention and also great ideas that you think you can apply to your own community. I'll also say that a lot of this tonight is highlighted in our hostess screening module on community, and I've put the link to that in the chat window as well. So I'll get out of the way after one last slide for context, and that is just saying this. Again, tonight's audience is specifically focused on veterans, but I'd like to invite everyone listening in to think about what brings people together overall, any kind of audience, and the why of why we do this kind of outreach. Well, intentionally, what we're trying to do with these types of events is diversify CCL's membership and bring in people and do things that we haven't done before, people that we haven't perhaps interacted with or might not feel in our full comfort zone having a chance to strike up a conversation with immediately, or have really gotten in the door before in any kind of climate advocacy. And so I know that the current national focus for CCL is diversifying on three types of audiences: conservatives, people of color, and young adults. And what I'd love to really ask everyone listening in is, what type of diversity would help your chapter? Again, we're going to be focusing on veterans tonight, but what additional voices could help you build your group and connect with your members of Congress? That's really the whole key of this webinar. So without further ado, I am going to pass the baton. And again, just thank you so much for being on the line again tonight. Sit back and relax, and it's going to be a wonderful show.
Okay, great. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Rick Devereaux here. And as Brett mentioned, I was involved in hosting a pretty successful showing of The Bird in Asheville, North Carolina, a couple years ago. And you know, in our approach that evening when we showed the film, our target group was veterans. Now, why veterans? Well, as Brett mentioned, one of CCL's strengths is bringing people together from disparate groups to sort of engage in this conversation about climate. And people that are interested in national security or veterans aren't typically the same folks that talk about climate and climate change. So this is an opportunity to bring groups together. You know, veterans are not a monolithic group, as this slide suggests. It's a diverse group. So don't fall into the trap of thinking that if you bring in one veteran, you're going to bring in, you know, hundreds or more, because they have different opinions and different perspectives. But what they do have is credibility. They lean conservative. They're an important voice, as the slide suggests. People listen to veterans when it comes to national security or topics about threats to our nation. A veteran's voice is listened to. So it's a great, great audience to target. One of my favorite quotes on this comes from Senator Lindsey Graham, who said, the more you retired generals and admirals speak about the national security implications of climate change, the easier it is for a Republican like me to get involved. So in other words, when folks hear folks in uniform talk about climate change and its implications, they listen and pay attention. It's kind of a positive dog whistle, if you will. And when you think about events targeting veterans, don't limit the target just to veterans. Think about others, like folks interested in national security, foreign policy, people with conservative leanings, because for these events to be successful, I think you want a nice, diverse, healthy cross-section. We're not looking for homogenous veteran-only events, but truly diverse and engaging kind of groups.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rick. And one other thing I forgot to mention as we're transitioning to inviting you to think about your first prompt is that you might recognize his charming voice. He was our speaker for CCL's National Call last November, I believe, for Veterans Day. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So we're happy to have you back on as one of our most highly rated speakers. So I'll just share this. Again, we're going to take a little pause between each of these sections to invite you as the audience to think about who you're interested in. And what I'd like to do this first question is just ask you to think about a target audience that you'd be interested in trying to attract to your event. Who is it? Write it down, think about it, and we'll come back to it. And what we'll do next is just really get a background again for what these films are that we're going to be talking about tonight. And who better to tell us about the power, the impact, and the creative history behind The Burden and Tidewater than their very creator. I'll pass it to you, Roger.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I produced first The Burden. I came upon... I'm going to get a little wonky here on you, but I learned about the Quadrennial Defense Review in 2010. And at the time, I was highly frustrated, like many of you probably were and are still to some degree, at the way some issues, even though they are clearly scientific in nature, tend to get highly politicized, depending upon who's presenting the data. And with all due respect, to Al Gore, I think the fatal mistake in the climate movement was rallying around someone who is such a political animal. Never mind what his views are. Anybody, any political figure can polarize. You see it no matter what party letter comes after your name. And I think the beautiful thing about the military is that of all of our government agencies, at least so far, the military is associated with being apolitical. And as the general can tell you, and anyone who has served, politics is not just inappropriate for the military, it's dangerous. You don't want life and death decisions being made based on political ideologies. You got to look at the facts. And so that's really what I set out on when I went. So coming back to the Quadrennial Defense Review, there was a phrase in there that called climate change a threat multiplier. We've heard that term a lot nowadays, but it was sort of fresh and new, I thought, in 2010. And it occurred to me that that's the way into this conversation. We're not talking about polar bears. We don't want to push all the same buttons that tend to get pushed in these discussions. You must hate the earth, so therefore, you must be a Republican, or you're a Democrat, you don't care about jobs. I mean, these arguments got so reduced to nonsense. Either you're for the environment or you're for the economy was sort of this trope for a while. And I think it's clear to a lot of people that our economic health, our energy, our environmental health, all of these things are so intertwined. And of course, they all go to our national security. And so national security traditionally has always been more of a unifying factor than most other issues in our civic life. So I thought it would be a good place to engage people who had been skeptical simply because poor old Al Gore was the poster child for climate change. And so to take it out of the political realm and put it into the realm of selfless sacrifice, honor, all of those great qualities that we associate with military service. I thought that was the way to go, and not to do it in a way that's pandering, but really just to present the facts. It's all about blood and treasure. Any military leader will tell you that force protection is at the heart of every decision that they make. And certainly the higher up you go in the chain, the more you're responsible for making sure tax dollars are spent properly through your commands. And so, it seemed like a no-brainer to me. It's still surprising to me that, 8 years later, people still will come up to me and say, wow, I never thought about it like that. And I don't feel responsible for that. I would blame the wider media for not making that more of an issue. The burden looked at how the military was embracing renewable energy, again, for the reasons that I stated, not because there's some sort of sentimental caring for Mother Earth. If it didn't have anything to do with fighting and winning the nation's wars, it wasn't going to be on the table for the military. And so I thought that was a great way into the conversation, and that led to the next film called Tidewater, which looks at how sea level rise affects national security, specifically in the Hampton Roads region, where we have our largest concentration of military bases or installations in the United States, including our largest naval base. There are real life examples of sailors who just can't get to work sometimes because it's flooding. In many cases, those sailors are not from coastal areas. They come from the interior of the country, and they don't know what to do with this. They've never seen anything like that before. So again, another way into the conversation. First one is more on energy. The second is more on environment, but both have a tremendous impact on national security.
Thank you so much, Roger, for giving us a little bit of the vision behind what the origin for both of those fantastic movies were. And we'll just take a quick pause. Again, the link to find out more about both these and how you can screen it is in the chat as well. And for the second step along our journey tonight, think about, as Roger shared the content behind The Burden in Tidewater, what content is it for you that would attract your target audience? And again, take a moment, think about what that might look like and how you could create that in your own community or bring that in with films like what we're discussing tonight. And we'll move on as you think about that to talk about a critical element that Sean's going to highlight on focused recruitment. And I guess I think first it's Rick, my apologies.
Okay. Now we've, Roger has led us through a discussion of the content, the genesis of the content. The good news is the content for your event is excellent. But the problem is, if you build it, they won't necessarily come. And if my big takeaway, hopefully for you this evening, is marketing has to be your main effort. 80% of your effort, I would estimate, needs to go into marketing your event. 20% in actually executing or planning the event itself, but it's all about getting the people to come out. And remember, effort doesn't count. You don't get an A for effort. It's all about results and being effective with your marketing. So really think that through. How do you get the folks that you want to come out? And one of the key facets of that is getting these trusted messengers. In other words, if you're going to target veterans, getting a veteran in your group that is well-connected to the veteran community, that's credible, and that has a passion for the national security implications of climate change. If you've got that person and they're committed, you're halfway there. But it's really, really important to identify one or two folks like that right up front. And then go out to the veterans groups, go to the Veterans Council. When we promoted our event in Asheville, it was myself and our CCL chapter leader, Steffi Rausch, and it was this retired general with, I hope Steffi wouldn't be offended, but a hippie chick who was very passionate about CCL. And the veterans group looked at us and they go, "We don't know what to make of these two, but we were interested." They got our attention. We showed the Burden trailer, and in the trailer, these veterans don't see talking think tank heads, but they see real veterans, people in uniform, people at the Pentagon, and they're like, "Okay, you got my attention. I want to come to your event." So it's about getting out there with a lot of shoe leather, talking to the veterans group, and don't be afraid to stir up a little controversy in your marketing. Say that this is not going to be your standard climate change event. We're going to look at this event through a different lens. We're going to bring disparate groups together. We're going to look at climate change in a way that you've never looked at it before. Get out there. I remember when we promoted our event, we got on a conservative radio talk show, and I got in a bit of a dialogue with the talk show host, and he said, "Well, I know you're just trying to get veterans to come out for really an environmental pitch, and as soon as they show up, you'll roll out your Trojan horse, and the tree huggers will jump out, you know, and accost them." And I said, "Well, I understand that perspective, but we get the same criticism from the far left that we're going to use veterans to somehow promote environmental stewardship when everyone knows that the military is the worst offender when it comes to the environment." So stir up a little controversy, a little bit of action, and that will help get a good turnout. And be sure to really leverage people's personal networks. You know, flyers, emails, social media, all that is good, but there's no substitute for personal appeals to people that have their own groups, their own networks, things like Rotary clubs or veteran groups or other kind of networks. You know, one final little anecdote on this slide is, and it gets to the last bullet, the importance of not reverting to inviting only your standard audience. At our event, we had sort of the traditional climate change crowd with veterans, with a group from a local World Affairs Council who was interested in foreign policy. And one of the veterans came up to me afterwards and said, "You know, tonight I had my first meaningful conversation with an environmentalist. And you know, they're not half bad. They're not half bad." So it's this idea of engagement and dialogue. And but I'll tell you, I can't foot stomp the marketing aspect enough.
And then I think some important notes, you know, it obviously be best if that champion you had and the veteran was in your chapter, but they don't have to be. I know a lot of CCL chapters out there are young and don't have veteran presence, but if you can get someone influential in the area, to just make some connections and refer people to it and push them to go, that's still huge. And then think about what would draw you to watch a movie on a topic you right now don't care about. So it's not going to be just the fact there's a movie for free or for $5. You need to have a strong panel that has some street credibility and is going to draw people in. And you need to be able to frame the message in your recruiting towards the audience you're recruiting towards. You don't have to have just one pitch. If you're going to a veterans group, it's about veterans issues. If you're going to a business council or the, you know, something like that, then you use an economy perspective. And so you just got to shape it towards who you're trying to get there.
Yeah. If I can just jump in, I couldn't agree more. And I think having a localized call to action is critical. And even if that action is just simply talk to your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving, that's a call to action. You know, every place is different. Sometimes it's some kind of political action that's required in the moment. There's a bond measure people are voting on and you want them to take that kind of action, or you just simply want them to write letters. I mean, it could be anything, but I'd always recommend figuring out what that call to action is first. And then that helps you figure out who should be on your panel and then what needs to be talked about in the Q&A, which is a really critical part of the event.
Excellent. Thank you all three. One quick pause moment here is just thinking about your own recruitment strategy. Who is it that you want to bring in with your target audience, and how can you use the recommendations that all three of our panelists have shared about recruiting people to attend and being strategic about how you're engaging them and really leveraging the power of local media as well as Facebook? I know that was the post that we shared just on that last slide about one of the local events and really having that social proofing. Think about what that looks like for you. And as you transition into doing that, let's talk about where you're actually going to hold the place. What's the place that you're going to hold the event, rather? I know both of you have wonderful examples from your own experiences.
Okay, yeah. As they say in real estate, location, location, location. Yeah, where you hold your event really does matter. It sends a signal. You know, we actually had two showings of the Burden in Asheville. The first was a somewhat of a failed attempt, and we did it at a sort of local movie theater complex. It was associated with sort of the green crowd, kind of artsy movies located right downtown. We had a small showing, mostly preaching to the choir for that event. But the second time around, we targeted a brewery, and it wasn't a brewery downtown. It was a brewery a little bit on the outskirts, had more of a blue collar crowd and feel to it. So it was sort of a neutral venue, a venue that anybody from any walk of life would feel comfortable walking into. So it felt like more of a home game than an away game for a veteran. And I think breweries are sort of a nice place if you can find one, you know, a little lubrication for the evening, and the discussion is helpful. And besides the location itself, think about how you will facilitate mingle time before and after your event, because as Roger said, this is when the calls to action can really start to be formulated if people have time to talk and chat and they feel comfortable in the location.
So to give some examples of where we've been successful and where we've kind of missed the boat, we've got one coming up in Virginia. We'll be at Vincent Hall, which is a community for veterans only. So every resident there is a vet, and they are obviously very connected as an organization to the veteran, to all sorts of veteran groups and conservative groups. And they have all sorts of events that are regularly attended, as you'd expect, by veterans. So by getting the showing there, we're instantly plugged into a huge network, and it's being, you know, marketed by Vincent Hall. So it's not some random CCLer making calls. It's the Vincent Hall staff saying, hey, we're having this event. Can't guarantee that that will go great, but I'm very confident. And then the flip side of that is, you know, we use that brewery methodology kind of as our game plan for the whole tour. And I actually put one together in Clarksville And the best location I thought was a distillery in town. It was a little outside of town. There was going to be no foot traffic. And there was really no reason for anyone to drive by there unless they were actually going to the event. And so that one was one of our lower showing events, just because people don't go and just hang out at a distillery in Clarksville, Tennessee. There weren't people walking by to see something going on. And so we were really relying on the marketing we had done before that. So I think it's just knowing the area you're in and where people are going to hang out and feel comfortable being. And so if you have that connection to the group, so if you have that veteran who's already kind of plugged in, they can be kind of a guide for you. Whereas if you're going in Clarksville, Tennessee, where we didn't actually have somebody on the planning team there, we're kind of just guessing. So I think you just got to leverage your connections and make the right call in the city you're in and the town you're in.
And I'll just throw this quick question out there for all three of you, I guess. One of which is, what would you recommend as far as putting together a panel? I've heard that you've mentioned, panels help draw or supplement the movie. And also, how do you properly recognize service for those that do come and attend as veterans during the event? How can you really honor their service, whether active or retired, as part of the event?
So as far as recognizing people, if the venue's going to charge admission, the easy answer is give veterans free admission. That's something that Rick suggested to me, and we're trying to implement now going forward. And then in terms of building the panel, the paradigm we've been looking at has been one sort of veteran or someone connected to the military and the defense, one kind of local influencer, and then someone from CCL. And we've shifted from that a little bit based on the event, but I think that's a smart methodology. A lot of people, the big names we've done, we did the mayor for Clarksville, and an exit poll showed that half the people there were there just to hear the mayor speak. I think that the one that General Devereaux did that was very successful, the majority of people were there because they wanted to hear General Devereaux speak. I think that those are pretty key draws. There's not much credibility behind having Sean Collins, an Army captain who got out, come speak. No one really cares what I have to say. So you got to think about, again, you're asking people to come in and spend 2 hours of their time on a topic that right now they don't care about. What's going to bring them in?
Yeah, I just add, I think the panel can be fluid, but having at least one veteran with some credibility in the sort of national security field and the topic is helpful. And a CCL person, of course, is people interested in the solution side of the equation. And then that third one is kind of a wild card, I think. Maybe it, like Sean says, a local draw, maybe an academic, maybe just somebody that is interested in bringing groups together, that has a reputation as someone that bridges gaps in the community. And offering free admission for veterans, I think, is really a good, veterans love free stuff. They're used to getting the military discount and so forth. So it's a nice way to say thank you up front.
And there's, it can't be overstated how important food and drinks are sometimes. So you give anybody free food and drink, I think you have something like an 80% chance increase that they're going to attend. But going back to something that General Devereaux said earlier regarding Lindsey Graham, go for a Republican. Get a high-profile Republican. I mean, it is the way into the conversation. That's one of the main reasons why I made these films. I sort of operate under it's sort of a cynical term, but internally I go with the idea of political cover. We're trying to provide political cover to politicians who are generally smart people, are very calculating people, and understand the power of a photo op. And just by standing up on a stage with, Lindsey Graham does not want to get on a stage with Al Gore. He won't do it. You give him all the free food in the world, he's not going to come. They all, and this is kind of cynical too, but they all want to be photographed next to a flag officer too. And again, not to at all condone the idea of, trotting out your soldiers with all of their medals to do the photo op. I'm not a big supporter of that. I think it's if the intentions are pure, it works. But a lot of the time, it's you're operating with people who do that on. I'm thinking of political hacks who are trying to get somebody elected. That's what they're going to do. We'll get a photo op with the general. So I think high profile is a key here. And then what that also enables you to do is it enables you to drive the conversation after the event. So what we always try to do at our screenings, and we actually formed our own organization. We certainly don't have the muscle and the reach of CCL, and we don't aspire to have that. So we're really grateful that CCL has this network and is able to do these webinars. But one thing we try to do is we try to attract media attention to some of these events. And the higher profile person you have, the more likely you're going to have media attention. So if you can get your, the representative of the district in which you're in, whether that's at the state level or the national level, that goes a long way. Because then if you can get media coverage, then not only did you have people come out that night, but then you have an article that's written the next day that then gets retweeted. So, just think about trying to keep that ball up in the air as much as you can. And certainly high profile individuals will ensure that it's more likely.
Absolutely. No, I think that all of you combined to just share some really powerful advice that was field tested and not just the standard roll out your CCL banner and sign up sheet and make sure to have a powerful call to action, but really how to personalize it. And I really love that home field rather than the away field metaphor as well, General Devereaux. So thanks for all of those examples. And what we'll just ask people listening in now is thinking about what location would work for your target audience. What would that look like? What would make them comfortable? What would bring them in? And keeping in mind all the advice that we've heard, continue to take notes down and personalizing it to your own community. And I'll just say this really quickly. So if you're like me and hearing all this information feels intimidating at times because it's a lot. One thing that we're also debuting tonight is a little template for a organizer, a Google Sheet that's going to be helping you, if you're interested, have a template to put everything all together and manage and delegate roles. And so I'll put that in the chat window here as well. And if you're listening in, it'll be in the additional links section of the webinar. But this CCL Outreach Event Planner is essentially just a helpful way that we have built out a systemized single document that can be shared across the event organizers and track who's doing what from the actual roles to who's contacted who in terms of local media or hung up flyers, who's invited the local politicians, what your speakers are doing or who's confirmed their headshot, you name it. It's all there in one spot. But I will say also this, that it's important if you do share this to make sure that it's only shared with the people that you are going to be organizing with, because just for privacy considerations, we want to make sure that this information isn't getting out there. It isn't available public. It isn't viewable beyond those that you're going to be viewing it at. So if you have questions about how to set it up in your Google Sheets, just let me know. And we do want to put a plug in for privacy as well as highlighting this helpful organizer. So with that, we've gone through the first half, and let's pivot to the bottom half of the hour here and focus on the other most important half. I'll pass it back to you, Sean, to talk about follow-up.
Yeah, so I think, before the event, it's marketing is really the biggest thing that matters. And then the flip side is the follow-up is probably the part that's actually going to pay the dividends. Because no one is going to go and see this movie and then immediately know what to do and how to take action. And so the whole point is that you're starting a conversation with these people. We're trying to reframe the way that this issue is being seen. And so you have to take them to being a climate warrior, right? So no one wants to get a mass email. People want to feel like they matter and they belong to a group and they're going to have impact and influence. So you need to see some sort of personal follow-up. So if it's a huge audience of, or if you had a really successful event with tons of people signing up, maybe you have a whole team of people that each do 5 or 6 follow-ups. If you've only get a few signups, then it can be one person. But really within 3 days, you need to have some sort of personal follow-up. Try and learn about them and their motivations and interests and figure out how you can use this person and build their interest and involvement. And then you want to give them a small task, because that's what gets people to be bought in, is that they need to invest something of their own. They've already given you time by going to the event, maybe money if they bought a ticket. And now you need to start ramping it up. So you need to give them a very specific task or project, so they can contribute. They can see results from whatever they did. They know that what they did made an impact. It gets them involved in the group. And then slowly you want to keep kind of ramping up the projects you're giving them until they are, you know, trying to start a new chapter somewhere. But you need to ramp them up, and you need to have that first one be something where there's tangible results they can see. So two other quick notes. Once you get the signups, get those names into Salesforce, so they're getting the CCL newsletters. So if you don't have Salesforce access, get it to your group leader, who can get it to the regional coordinator, whatever. But a name on your list is great, but a name on the CCL list provides a whole bunch of resources to get them. And then as you look at examples of tasks, a movie showing doesn't have to be the end of it. So you could do multiple events or tabling events, and scheduling and planning a movie event is a great task. You can say, hey, we need you to call these five veterans groups. We want you to work the table for 1 hour this week. Can you give us a list of, you know, three businesses that might be interested in doing a corporate support letter? Whatever it is, just something very simple. It doesn't have to be anything big, but something that does take some time and shows results, and ideally gets them working with other CCL members, so they feel like they're part of the community and part of the team.
So steps 5 and 6, just really focusing in. This is the last little prompt we'll provide, but what follow-up plans make sense for your event? And what help do you want to start thinking about ahead of time in bringing in others throughout your community to prepare for the event, as well as prepare for that follow-up, so you can be strategic and make sure that the ball isn't dropped?
Hosting partners is important, because I think by getting a particular group or two to join with you, it kind of brings in other groups after they follow in after that. You know, one of the things we did is we made this pitch to the local county veterans council. And the nice thing about that is that all the veterans group are represented in one forum. So you got them all there together. And what we actually did is convince them to have their monthly meeting before the showing of the burden. So, we offered to buy their beer for their meeting and so forth. And that worked out really nicely. But there's other groups that you can pitch this to, things like the Military Officers Association of America, or their acronym is MOA, M-O-A-A, a World Affairs Council. I mentioned Rotary Clubs and retiree groups are also American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, VFW. I noticed one of the chat questions had to do with Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace, this is kind of that could be an entry point for you, but I would be careful of making Veterans for Peace your sort of headliner partner group, because other veterans group could feel a little bit alienated from them. But I'll let the others chime in.
Yeah, I think Veterans for Peace is a great organization you definitely want to bring in, but they can be invited to your standard events. If you're doing conservative outreach and regular veterans outreach, they are not the group that is going to be your in. And in fact, if you bring them to a VFW or to a Team Red, White, and Blue meeting or something like that, that'll probably be one of the ends of the conversation.
Oh, you know, one other thing I'll throw in there is some folks will have active duty military installations near their chapter. I would lower your expectations in terms of getting active duty partners, local installation commanders, or local base officials. They're going to shy away from this kind of event because of the inherent politicization of climate change topic. they'll be leery. Doesn't mean that they won't show. And in some cases, you may be able to attract someone to your panel, especially if it's a fact-based conversation on, you know, sort of a sea level rise and how it might be affecting directly a coastal installation. But I would lower your expectations when it comes to active duty personnel being involved.
Yeah, and there was a question someone had just asked about approaching the base press office. I would, in fact, start there. If you would like to try to bring someone in active duty, certainly start with the PAO. And as the general said, it's fact-based. You can't stress that enough. If you lead with climate change, you get relegated to the dustbin over there. But we had a commanding officer at Naval Station Norfolk come out in uniform to our screening of Tidewater during the current administration. He's in the film, so that made it easier. But he wasn't there to talk about climate change. He was barely even there to talk about sea level rise. He was talking about the resilience of the bases against storms. And that's a great conversation to have. The solutions to making the base more resilient against storms is directly related to how we respond to climate change. So if they want to call it something with a lot of jargon and call it an infrastructure project, that's great. So you might lead with that. Just be very aware of the political buttons that can be pushed and stay away from those. Sound boring. You should sound boring when you make your request to the PAO.
Yeah, understand that, you know, if you make it sound political, it could be, you know, it sounds like something they're risking their career to speak at. But if you emphasize that it's something that they are doing, like in Georgia, there are quite a few solar projects on military bases. If you emphasize, hey, we want to talk about all the great things you're doing as a leader to build resilience and build and improve operational readiness, suddenly it's actually a good note for not only them, but the base, the Army. And it's not political. It's just explaining the steps that they're taking to make themselves readier.
Yeah, and you know, the Truman National Security Project has a great primer on, I think it's called the Military 101 webinar or something like that, where it's basically a slideshow, and it just sort of gives you some, you know, if you haven't served in the military and you don't really know the language. I certainly was on a steep learning curve a few years ago. This is a really good way to understand. You know, like you don't want to call up an Air Force base and say that you want soldiers to appear. You know, there's lots of really basic things that you can do to make yourself sound credible that are easy. So I would encourage you to just become familiar with some kind of military speak and jargon, and really just put yourself in their shoes. You know, if you're a press officer for a Navy captain, they're just looking out for two things, their own job and their boss, and nothing you can say is going to persuade them otherwise, unless it absolutely aligns with the task that they're trying to perform that's been given to them by their chain of command. So the more you can research that, and going to the Georgia example, in our new film, we profile the Army specifically because they put 30 megawatts on three different Army bases, and they worked with Georgia Power, the utility company there, and the Public Service Commission in Georgia. They all teamed up. I mean, it really was this great coming together of large, otherwise bureaucratic and gridlock-prone entities that really got a lot done in short time for the right reasons. And, you know, we got current DOD officials on camera for it under this current administration. And again, we didn't talk about climate change, but we talked about how they are able to train better, because they don't have interruptions of power on their bases. And that was the nature of the conversation, and they were happy to talk about it in those terms. And frankly, a lot of people in DOD, they're looking for ways to talk about this. But you have to present it the right way in order for them to come on board.
Yeah, I think that can't be emphasized enough. I mean, if you take away one word from this discussion, it's the word resilience. That is the buzzword in the military today when it comes to these topics, how to make our military more resilient, how to make them more operationally effective, how to reduce vulnerabilities, how to make our military more effective at war fighting. that should be the focus. You know, military really isn't interested in saving the planet, not even interested in entering the debate on human versus natural climate change, but they want to be better. They want to fight better, and resiliency is the way to get there.
And one other point about that is, you know, we get a lot of humanitarian effort coming from the military, and increasingly so as we see the, if you call up and you say you want to talk about how the military is so vital as a first responder in our community, stop there. Don't say because climate change is increasing the frequency of storms. You don't have to add that extra phrase in there. So that's actually another focus in this new film. Why does the base have to have uninterrupted power? Well, because A, they're training, and B, they're going to take care of all the rest of us when the roads are flooded and meals need to be distributed for a few days. And that's a story that everyone in uniform and out of uniform is eager to tell. It's a really underappreciated service for the military. I mean, I'll let the general explain why that's relevant to our national security, but it's something that we do around the world, and we do it here, and we really are being stretched even more thin because of the increased frequency of natural disasters.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, most veterans, when they really look at their careers in hindsight, and they add up all the humanitarian assistance and disaster response operations, even in this time of conflict that we're still in, they'll point to those operations oftentimes as being more numerous, more involved than their combat experience. So that's something that really resonates. And as Roger says, you don't have to, let the audience draw their own conclusion about those testimonials regarding activities and effort in providing that kind of response. They'll draw their own conclusions about whether the climate is changing, and that's taxing the military to a higher level.
Thank you so much, Roger, Sean, and General Devereaux, for all of these insights. And I'll just quickly go through this slide, and feel free to add anything else that you'd like to. And then we have one last little teaser here. So this can just be a quick minute highlighting that we are aware that tonight was talking about veteran and national security audiences. If you are also interested in thinking about what other audiences might attract more conservatives and who else to focus on, we have recommendations in the slide notes here tonight about really focusing with business groups. For example, the most recent U.S. business case for carbon tax forum that happened at the Global Climate Action Summit and featured some of the most well-known corporate leaders in the country. That'd be a wonderful event. If you're looking at rural-focused events or outdoor sports-oriented and winter industry sports, we have wonderful screenings on those as well. We also have a very vibrant action team, the Ski and Outdoor Industry Action Team, that I'll put a link to in the chat window as well, that's done outreach that has built supporters and endorsements from not only ski areas, but snowmobiler associations, skiers, scuba divers, birding, fishing, you name it. It really all depends on that location. And so I'll just emphasize that there's many other ways to draw and broaden that coalition, and we really appreciate zoning in tonight on this particular topic.
Looking back on the past 6 months of this project, if you shift the thought actually from how do I attract audiences to where do I go that audiences already are, you're going to spend so much time trying to get anybody in the room. Why not try and take advantage of having a partner? A lot of groups struggle to figure out what material to do for their monthly events. We have material. So package it in a way that allows you to get in front of them and I already receptive and already gathered group. So, I mean, again, remember how you're going to have to frame it properly, and you're going to have to package that because it's not necessarily something that they are actively interested in. But that'd be a way to get an audience.
Yeah. So I mentioned it a little bit, the new film, it's actually a film series on the future of the grid, on transforming the electric grid. And the reason why it's a series, I have a couple of reasons. It allows us to keep the conversation going beyond just one film, although I'm heartened to see that, you know, several years after other films have come out, we're still talking about them. So that's encouraging. But the grid, when you talk about transforming the grid, it's sort of foolish to think that you could just tell that story in one 40-minute film. It is a moving target like no other, with lots of developments and lots of aspects, so many stakeholders. And so we're really trying to look at as many aspects of it as we can. The first film in this series just premiered last week at the Global Climate Action Summit. And it's sort of like think of it as a table of contents on really what this narrative will look like. Kind of a, you know, strategic narrative is the term that I come back to. And it's not my term, but it comes from a colleague of General Devereaux's who's a two strategists for then Joint Chiefs Chairman Admiral Mike Mullen. Wrote a paper called A New National Strategic Narrative. And it really resonated with me. It's the time I was getting excited about the Quadrennial Defense Review. But they talk about the importance of being able to tell a good story, you know, to have that touchstone that everyone could come back to. So that's what we're trying to do with this narrative. And we're trying to bring together the interests of lots of private sector groups. So the utilities industry, the auto industry, tech, and of course, defense sectors. They all have a stake in how this grid gets transformed. And they all have a lot to lose if it doesn't get done right, specifically the auto and utilities sectors. So the focus of this first film is really trying to bring those interests together, because if we can get them on board, then we might just get the kind of policies and business environment that we need for our renewable energy economy to take off. And, you know, again, these are very conservative friendly themes. At no point did I say, you know, we need to have a big government plan for this. We just need to kind of create an environment in which there's at least a modicum of trust, and people understand that we're all moving in a direction that is in the name of prosperity for all of those industries involved. And the reason why auto is in there, because, you know, clearly electric vehicles are going to be a big player in all this, and the utilities, they're going to need to modify what they do in order to accommodate those electric vehicles. What we find, though, sort of a stumbling block now, is that, you know, people don't want to buy electric cars because they don't feel confident that there's enough charging infrastructure. And the people that would be tasked with putting in that charging infrastructure, such as the utilities and government, they're hesitant because they don't think people are driving electric cars. So we need to make sure that, you know, we get over this phase where the other person is waiting for the one person's waiting for the other one to jump in first. So that's sort of our call to action, is to bring these folks together, to highlight that they have common interests. And where national security comes in, as I mentioned earlier, we focused on the military bases, and we show what a great model the Army, and it's not just the Army. I mean, the Air Force and the Marines and the Navy, all in Georgia, are now really jumping into this because they saw that the utility company was ready to go. They had a good model with the Army. And so now the other branches are putting a lot of solar on their bases. And so our intention for covering that story was to show that this partnership could be then exported as a basic template for other regions in the country. And as you know, energy policy is really made on a state-by-state basis. So it's never going to be a perfect overlay, but there are elements of that partnership that can be applied to many other parts of the country, specifically where we have a lot of military installations. So that's essentially the intention of the film and the intention of the series. And we're going to be looking at rebuilding Puerto Rico. We're looking at the sociology of energy use, how we as a culture take it for granted, use it. And that's sort of going towards the efficiency model. Try to, you know, an easy call to action. Hey, everybody, use less electricity. Tough call for Americans, I know, but you know, one that I think we can put out there. So I'll stop there. I mean, there's a lot of other good ideas for the story of the future of the grid, and I'm sure as the days go by, the months and years go by, we'll learn of new topics for that.
Well, excellent. You definitely left us with a wonderful teaser there. And the link again is in the slide deck that you can follow along for after tonight's webinar, as well as the actual chat window And so I'm aware that we have about a minute left. So let's still at least be available for one, if not two questions, if all three of our esteemed guests are willing for anyone that's still on the line that hasn't had their questions answered. And I'll just throw out there, I loved hearing your reference to the National Strategic Narrative, Roger. I remember back in 2011, one of the co-authors, Colonel Nickleby, was also one of our national speakers. So we at CCL have been a big fan of their work, and I'm glad to hear that that was one of your earlier inspirations here as well. So
the other co-author was Captain Wayne Porter, who is in The Burden. Many of you know who that is.
Thank you for that connection. Sean, do you just want to highlight the Veterans Special, speaking of that, for Congressional Education Day?
Yeah, Congressional Education Day will be right after Veterans Day, so the 12th and 13th of November. And any military veterans can use the code VETERAN and have the fee completely waived. So if you know anyone who's involved in CCL or interested in it, who is a military veteran, just make sure they know that code so they can get there for free.
And that's definitely another way that CCL is trying to really honor the lives and services that have been involved in this specific campaign. So please continue to feel free to reach out and offer that as an important opportunity for us to venerate and lift those voices in our lobby visits in DC. We're very honored again to have all three of our esteemed guests on the line tonight. And if you do have any questions for General Devereaux, for Roger, for Sean, for myself, please feel free to reach out. Sean and I's email is here. We'd love to forward those questions if they are specifically for either General Devereaux or Roger as well. And again, at this point, we're just so grateful for all of you making time tonight. We couldn't do this without you. And all of those that are tuning in later, thank you for your work and your efforts in reaching out and conducting these events and planning these actual outreach opportunities for your own communities. We hope you found tonight's webinar helpful. We look forward to hearing your feedback on what worked and how we can all continue to advance the political will for a livable world. I'll unmute all lines, and again, thank you all for being on the line tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brett.
Great webinar. Thank you all. Really appreciate it.